On today's podcast, Take 34, Hey Little One by Glen Campbell and Petula by Petula Clark.
Trust the Wizards present Robert Pollard's Guide to the Late 60s. Before going on tour with his band, Guided by Voices, in 2001, Robert Pollard recorded his favourite records onto 62 double-sided cassettes. Music from 1966 to 1971, from the best-known bands of the era to obscure, unheard-of psychedelic curios. The Wizards are on a mission to listen to and explore every groove. Kicker and Chorizo invite you to turn off your mind, relax, and float downstream as you listen to Robert Pollard's Guide to the Late 60s.
Glen Campbell, then, he's got to be the only person on Pollard's list who's actually recorded a cover version of a GBV song, right?
I think that must be true. Since all these recordings are mostly of artists who were... Well, I don't like to use the term really, but dead.
Yes, yes. Well, I saw Glen Campbell on that tour when that Ghost on the Canvas album, which I'm a big fan of, when that album came out. They announced it in advance that he was suffering with Alzheimer's, and they announced it in advance that it was going to be his very last tour. And I went to see it. I'd been meaning to see Glen Campbell for a long time. Big fan of his, although I've got to say I don't know this album until I was listening to it for this podcast. But it was his goodbye tour, and we got all the big hits. Oh, it was at the Lowry in Salford, which I've been to with you for other gigs.
Good venue, that, isn't it, really?
It is a lovely venue, yeah. He had loads of his kids in his band. His daughter, Ashley Campbell, on banjo was a particular standout. And he did quite a lot of songs from the two albums he put out around that time where he was doing a little bit of a Johnny Cash with Rook Rubin thing, I think, which, although it wasn't, you know, back to basics with just, you know, guitar and vocal stuff. And on those albums, he covers Guided by Voices, U2, Lou Reed, Foo Fighters, Paul Westerberg, and he did quite a few of those, but he didn't do Hold on Hope when I saw
it. Oh, did he not? No, okay. But, did you play any of the album, the songs on this, Hey Little One? Hey Little One, he might have played.
I think he might have played Hey Little One. Yeah. I mean, if other than that, I think that might be it.
That was his first number one on the country charts.
Yeah, it was a bit of a breakthrough album for him. But it was just you know, to that song, A Better Place. So he finished the gig with A Better Place, which is the opening song from the Ghost on the Canvas album. And it's to watch a man who you know you will never see again because this is his farewell tour. Suffering from a terrible disease like Alzheimer's, standing on a stage surrounded by his own children, supporting him in it, both musically and you know, in just being there, singing you know, some days I'm so confused, Lord, my past gets in the way. I need the ones I love, Lord, more and more each day. One thing I know, the world is good to me. A better place awaits. You'll see. Not a dry eye in the house, I tell you.
No, I can imagine. Yeah,
It was a very, very memorable gig for lots and lots of reasons.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, onto this album then. So this album came out in 68, early 1968. Recorded, as most of Glen's stuff was, in Capitol Studios, California, alongside, you know, the Wrecking Crew, that sort of hotshot LA-based studio session musicians that Glen Campbell himself had been a major part of. Other musicians like Al Casey, Jim Gordon, Earl Palmer, all that gang. Basically, their CV is the history of American pop music up until that point, really, isn't it?
Right, absolutely. And do you see who's on banjo on this album?
I did not, no. Who's on banjo?
Well, I did have to have a double take, but it's Doug Dillard.
Oh, from Dillard and Clark.
Well, I'm guessing so, but I was thinking it was Doug Gillard.
But oh, it's not. It's of course, Dillard. Yeah. No, you know, Dillard and Clark, weren't they an offshoot of the Birds?
That sounds right. Yeah. I don't know. Would it be him? Is he just a banjo player?
He could well be. Yeah. Yeah. It was. Mm. It was. There was slightly even more country than the Birds.
Right.
Yeah. Mm.
It's a lineup, isn't it? In terms of
yeah. Oh yeah. 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 And it's you know, there's quite a few songs on here that I already knew. But not necessarily that I knew the Glen Campbell version.
Oh, right.
In fact, I don't think I knew the Glen Campbell versions of any of these songs. So there was Elusive Butterfly, which I know the original of, and I've got a bit of a backstory with that, actually, because in, let me work it out, 2006, my mum and dad had a Ruby wedding party, and they asked, I was at the time playing in a covers band with my wife, who did loads of 60s stuff, slightly country, slightly rockabilly, lots of Birds and Elvis and Roy Orbison and the like, Johnny Cash, that kind of thing. And they asked us to play at their 40th anniversary thing, and we learnt, as a special treat for them, we learnt a bunch of songs that were released in 1966, the year of their wedding. Yeah. And one of the songs we learnt was that Elusive Butterfly one by Bob Lynn. So we already used to do in that band, Gentle On My Mind, the song that's best known as, by Glen Campbell, which is very, very similar, isn't it?
It reminds me of Midnight Cowboy. Is Gentle On My Mind on Midnight Cowboy? It should be,
no,
if it isn't.
No, but they've both got, well, if you want to get technical for a minute, they've both got that kind of opening chord sequence, which is the major chord of whatever key it's in, the major chord followed by the major seventh of that very same chord. That sort of ding, 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 ding. And in Gentle On My Mind and Elusive Butterfly, it goes ding, 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 ding. It continues down the scale. So, yeah, I can see why it might remind you of that. It's kind of basically the same two chords for opening. But it's a song I really, really already liked. And a song I've heard quite a few versions of before. Frank Sinatra, Aretha Franklin, and the Bob Lind one. And the Four Tops version is very good. But I think the Glen Campbell version is now my favourite version of this song.
Oh, wow. Were you aware? I know I sent you a track by John Otway and Attila the Stockbroker.
Right.
Cheryl's Going Home. Were you aware of that song?
Well, only because I've got like a double CD best of John Otway, and I've seen John Otway live a few times. I didn't know it was a cover until you told me.
Well, it's apparently this is from the rock opera Cheryl, which is written basically based on this song, on Elusive Butterfly.
And I think I read that Elusive Butterfly was originally the B-side of Cheryl's Going Home by Bob Lind.
Ah, okay.
Originally, it was the B-side of the single. I also didn't realise, but I've checked it out since, that the two songs, Gentle On My Mind and Elusive Butterfly, are so similar. Not just in the the tempo is the same, the chord structure is very similar, the feel of it is very similar, but also some of the lyrics and the fact that he's got these very long lines. Whenever, one of my, probably my favourite opening lyric to any song ever is from Gentle On My Mind. It's knowing that your door is always open and your path is free to walk on that makes me tend to leave my sleeping bag rolled up and stashed behind your couch. What a brilliant line. And what a long line. You know, that's basically the entire first verse. But there's lots of similar stuff. You know, you might wake up in Elusive Butterfly. You might wake up some morning to the sound of something moving past your window in the wind. And if you're quick enough to rise, you'll catch the fleeting glimpse of someone's fading shadow out on the new horizon. That's just one sentence, that.
Yes. Well, there's lots of interesting lines. I like the idea of sleep leaving your ears.
Yes, yeah. You might have seen me running through the long abandoned ruins of the dreams you left behind.
Yeah.
And there's also a mention of actual canyons of your mind. What's that? The windmill.
Bonzo Dog
Doodah Band, and we're obviously paying attention to this, and,
yes,
as well as Windmills of Your Mind.
You said you knew a few. What else did you know already?
Break My Mind, which I assumed, because I know it from the Lee Hazlewood and Anne Margaret version, and I've always assumed it was a Lee Hazlewood. I really like that their version. And I always assumed it was a Lee Hazlewood original, just because there's quite a lot of humorous touches in the lyrics, which is a sort of Lee Hazlewood trope, isn't it? You know, the bit about keep your suitcase off the scales in time, tell the man you've suddenly developed a thing about flying. And also the bit, just the chorus, which says, if you leave, you're going to leave a babbling fool behind. That's a very Lee Hazlewood line,
that's actually one song that I knew before I heard this album, because it's on the letter the album The Letter by the Box Tops, which is Alex Chilton.
Yes.
I have to say I prefer the Alex Chilton version, although this was all right.
This is good. It's a good version, but it's not going to beat Lee Hazlewood and Anne Margaret. Very little does in my book, yeah.
I think there are some really good songs on this album, but it's too syrupy for me.
Yeah.
The strings are a bit too much, and this is an example of that. I like the country soul feel to it, but it's just too soaked in the strings for me to really...
Talking of strings then, let's go on to another song, the original of which we're both very familiar with, which is the Bob Dylan song, I Don't Believe You, Braggart, She Acts Like We Never Have Met. One of my favourite Dylan songs,
great song.
I used to busk when I was a teenager. I've also been a big
fan. I don't believe you.
Not Judas. I've also always been a big fan of the live version by Lloyd Cole and the Commotions that I used to have on a 12-inch single, still do have, in fact, 12-inch single of Jennifer, She Said. But Glenn slows it down quite a lot, turns it into a ballad. It's got lovely strings, and it is a good version. Yeah. It's still a great song, but I'd give me Bob's or Lloyd's version.
It's not bitter enough.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Yeah, all those mid-60s Bob Dylan sneering songs.
Yeah, great. Positively Fourthly and all that
yes,
stuff.
Yes, exactly, yeah. So, the other song, the other two songs that I'm sure you know the originals of these as well. It's Over, the song originally by Roy Orbison, and originally one of the greatest records ever made, and that's just, a fact. You can try and argue that if you want. And it's done very faithfully by Glenn. It's Glenn Campbell, so he sings it incredibly competently. He sings it in the same key, but nobody can really do Heartbreak like Roy Orbison with that vulnerability of his delicate, wavering vibrato that he has. And I was trying to think, well, if I'd never heard the original by Roy Orbison and I just heard this, it's over by Glenn Campbell, I would probably think, wow, what a song, what a performance.
Right.
And like a lot of Roy Orbison songs, especially the ballads, the vocal just goes higher and higher as the song goes on.
No, it's a great delivery, but it's not the same.
I noticed, I did quite a lot of my music degree writing about records by Roy Orbison and Eddie Cochran and Buddy Holly and things. And so I've studied It's Over in great detail. And I noticed, that the mark of a truly great singer, truly, truly great singer, is not necessarily the ability to hit a high note. It's the ability to hit and then hold that high note. So Glenn Campbell, if you'll forgive me my terrible version, Glenn Campbell sings at the end, he goes, "It's over, it's over, it's over, it's over." Like that, very short on the last O. Whereas Roy keeps you waiting for that resolution, because he goes, "It's over, it's over, it's over, it's over." He keeps that over.
Yeah, for a long killer. Time. That's the difference, isn't it?
Yeah. And that just that tiny little detail makes it an even more dramatic ending to the song.
Yeah. 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 Interesting. And presumably you're going to say that The Impossible Dream is another song that you knew before.
Yes, that's the other one.
It's just really, isn't it? I couldn't have told you. Well, Frank Sinatra, I'd have said, did it, but I, other than that, I really don't know. Andy Williams, did he do it?
Sorry, what did you say?
I said, did Andy Williams do it? I'm thinking he might have done.
Yeah, that's probably the most famous version.
Yeah, in fact,
I was watching a film just recently called Nobody with, is his name Bob Odenkirk? He's in Breaking
Bad. Yeah.
It's quite good, actually. Quite a good film. Quite violent. But a really good soundtrack. I'd recommend it. And the Andy Williams version of that is used very effectively in that film. I know it by Cartoon the Unstoppable Sex Machine.
Oh, of course. Yes.
who's did it on the final track of their...
Definitive version.
Well, it matches any of the previous versions for passion and feeling, without doubt. Glenn's version is fantastic. I'm not sure. It might be my favourite version of the song. It's not a song I particularly love. I imagine it's not a song that you have much truck with, is it, Kicker?
No, it's not my thing, really. Not my cup of thrills, as Robert Forster would say. Yeah. No, it doesn't do anything for me. But I can appreciate the technical ability involved in delivering it.
Yes. But yeah.
The songs I like best, and that you haven't mentioned yet, actually.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Well, no, actually, Lucy Butterfly's all right. That's definitely one. But I would say my favourite is the opener, which is Hey Little One Itself.
Yeah. Really nice. I mean, I didn't really do a lot for me, that one. I liked the hay, which he holds a hay for four and a half bars in the middle there.
No, I think that's really good. That's really that's mixtape stuff for me, that one.
Okay.
And I didn't realise that. Well, written by Dorsey Burnett and Barry DeVorzon, of course.
Uh-huh.
But Dorsey Burnett is the brother of Johnny Burnett, who I like a lot of his stuff.
Is he a rockabilly guy?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Was he on Sun Records?
Yes.
I can't think of any of his songs, but the name rings a bell. Original was recorded by Dorsey Burnett and was quite a big hit song in 1960. I went and sought that out to see how it compared. It's very, very similar. Glenn has not done much with the arrangement to change it. But I did like the bit near the end where the hays get kind of gradually higher and higher, a bit like Roy Orbison, I suppose.
I particularly like that one, and I also like the opener to the second side, which is I Want to Live, which when I was saying at the beginning was he had his first number one on the country charts. That was the single that was his first number one, and that's written by the same bloke who wrote Break My Mind,
John D. Loudermilk.
Yeah,
it's a good name, that, isn't it? Again, that one I didn't really care for that one too much.
Well, I think he really lets rip vocally on that one, but the strings are a bit much for me again.
Yeah, I mean, I like the chorus. That was about all I could say. I like the soaring chorus.
Okay.
Yeah, that's about it. There was a couple of other songs that I've just weren't particular highlights. The only other one I really liked was a song called "Turn Around and Look at Me" on side two, which was a re-recording of Glenn's first actual hit from 1961. I don't think it was a massive hit, but it was a bit of a hit in 1961. And then it had been covered by various others, including the Bee Gees. And then he did a new version of it. Again, didn't change it very much. So again, it's got that Roy Orbison trick of the vocals getting higher and higher as the emotions get more intense. Apart from the Hold On Hope, the Ghost on the Canvas and the other ones that he made in the 2000s, I don't think I've really ever listened to Glen Campbell albums in full. I just know various Glen Campbell compilations. Having said that, I'm sure there must be Glen Campbell albums out there from his sort of peak 60s and 70s era that must be a bit more consistently strong than this.
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, I'm no expert in Glen Campbell. This is his eighth album, so he's quite a long way into his career, really, here, isn't he?
Yeah. So, overall, I'll give it about. The songs I really like I said, the four songs I already knew by other people, really, like Impossible Dream. I think Glenn's version is now my favourite version. Elusive Butterfly, Glenn's version is now my favourite version. Break My Mind, I love, but it's not going to displace Lee and Anne Margaret's version as being my favourite, and the song Turn Around and Look at Me, which I didn't know previously, which I quite like.
Right.
But overall, that's not enough to get it much of a mark out of 10, so I'm going 4.5.
Right. Well, I'm a little bit lower than that, because there are actually songs in there where I did tend to skip. That's All That Matters, Take Me Back, Woman. Fairly dire stuff for me.
Yeah.
And it's really not my thing. But I there are a couple of songs that redeem it. I gave it a 4.
Okay, so we're roughly in the same zone there, aren't we?
Yeah.
So do you want to tell us a bit about Petula?
Okay, so we're going to talk about Petula, the album by Petula Clark. This came out in 1968 on Pye Records. And the two albums that preceded it, These Are My Songs and The Other Man's Grass Is Always Greener, had been produced by Sonny Burke with Tony Hatch, the producer songwriter who'd kind of established her as a star in '64. But they, with Hatch again, he became the exclusive producer on this one and all the album tracks. But it will be the last of her albums to feature original material produced by him. So it's kind of the end of that kind of era. Because, of course, she was, you know, best known for Downtown.
Yes. I mean, more than half the songs are written by Tony Hatch and Jackie Trent, aren't they?
That's right, yeah. And there's a Les Reed Barry Mason song, Kiss Me Goodbye, which was a hit single in the US. I think it got to top 20.
And again, there's a few songs here that are kind of better known
by other people,
aren't they? Really?
Yeah, absolutely. This album did really well. It did much better than the previous albums anyway. But yeah, it's a bit of an MOR type album for me.
I have a higher tolerance for. I mean, this is without doubt of all the people who's been on Pollard's list so far, this is the most out and out pop music record that we've had to talk about, isn't it?
Yeah.
And it's not something that would necessarily be considered cool, or certainly wouldn't have been when we were teenagers, growing up in the post-punk world. But the thing is, when I first moved to London in the early 90s, I used to go to clubs where they'd play this kind of stuff. They'd play, you know, Petula Clark and Glen Campbell and Tom Jones and Gene Pitney and that kind of stuff. So I've got a big soft spot for this kind of, the Carpenters, you know. so I've got a big soft spot for this kind of thing.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think you do have a tolerance for the pure pop. I mean, I think the part of the problem for me is that Petula Clark, during our musical listening lifetime, she was kind of a straight-laced entertainer on TV and didn't really, as far as I know, wasn't really releasing songs anymore.
Very much guest star on the Two Ronnies.
Yeah, that's right. Although I do like, and I've got quite a lot of her material that was released in France in French. And I know I sent you the version. I think, I don't know if it was a hit, but the La Nuit Non Finit Plus, which somehow is a cover of Needles and Pins, which I think is really good. But you didn't particularly like that.
Well, I don't particularly like Needles and Pins, so my thoughts on that were really, well, just because it's Needles and Pins, just because it's in French doesn't make it any better. I've never really liked the song Needles and Pins in the first place, but she's done loads of French stuff. Loads and loads.
Yeah, she has. Yeah. She was hugely popular, yeah.
Yeah. There are some songs on here that I did quite like, though. Starting with a couple of the, well, three songs, again, like the Glen Campbell album, three songs where they're already songs I like, but I know them by other people. So, This Girl's in Love with You. I absolutely love this song. Yeah. And I think this version is really good.
I think that's the best song on the album for me.
Yeah. It's been done by Dusty Springfield. And Dionne Warwick is obviously always the benchmark for any Bacharach and David song. And it's on Kevin Rowland's My Beauty album. And that is still my favourite version. But it's a really, really, really sad song. The singer is so in love. The man she's singing about doesn't seem interested, but she's going to confess her love to him all the same. And my hands are shaking. Don't let my heart keep breaking. I need your love. I want your love. Say you're in love with this girl. If not, I'll just die.
Yeah.
And it's pretty heavy stuff. And then that very sad trumpet solo that is on all the great versions of this song and the big dynamic ending. I think it would be very difficult for me to hear any version of this song that I didn't really, really like.
Yeah, well, yes, I think the song definitely carries it, but she delivers it well, you know.
She does, yeah, she sings it with a lot of power. She's a very, very, very good technical singer. Possibly a better singer, technically, than Dusty, but I tend to prefer Dusty. Again, it's like wavering vulnerability in her voice. There's a bit more emotion in Dusty Springfield's voice. The Days by Ray Davies, we talked about when we did the Kinks podcast. It's a very good version of a song I love very, very much. It's one of my favourite Kinks song. Kirsty MacColl's version will never be bettered, in my opinion. And The Good Life. Oh, The Good Life. The final song, which is
horrible.
Known as a Tony Bennett song.
Lacrimose nonsense.
I love the Tony Bennett version of this song. And this version is also pretty good.
Do you know who wrote it?
I do, because I looked it up for this. Sasha Distel.
Yeah.
And Jack Reardon, who's the brother of former world snooker champion Ray Reardon. No, I don't. He might be. I don't know. I haven't checked that out. But, I mean, she's done more of a full band version. It's a bit faster than Tony Bennett's version. But there's great interplay between the strings and the brass on the instrumental bit in the middle. And, again, it's a song I love. It would have to be sung really, really badly for me to not like anybody singing that song, really. Probably, or someone I already don't like Robbie Williams. I'm sure if Robbie Williams did it, and he probably would, and he probably has, actually, I wouldn't like that. But, you know, it's a song I love, and it would be very difficult to ruin it.
Well, it did absolutely nothing for me. Sasha Distel, of course, is in a similar vein to Petula Clark, in my mind, is sort of a 70s game show entertainer.
Yes. You know, I mean, the two Ronnie's singing guest stars seem to alternate all the time between Sasha Distel, Petula Clark, and Barbara Dixon. They were I think the three of them were just on a rotating stage backstage waiting to appear and to do the musical number, weren't they?
Yeah. The one I quite like, the Why Can't I Cry, I thought that was all right. That I thought was a bit Jack Brel-like.
Yes, well, it's a waltz time in the chorus, isn't it? She was beaten to the punch, really, by Tom Jones. Because he released his version of this song just a few weeks ahead of Petula's version. And you can see why he might want to record this, having just had a massive hit with Delilah. Incidentally, on that subject, Kiss Me Goodbye, written by, as you mentioned, Les Reed and Barry Mason, was very nearly a number one hit single in Belgium for Petula. It got all the way to number two, but it was stopped from getting to the number one position in that key market of Belgium by another song written by Les Reed and Barry Mason, namely Tom Jones singing Delilah.
So you'd like to think, wouldn't you, that Petula Clark and Tom Jones were mortal enemies.
I like to think that. Yeah, I like to think. And they're both still going as well. Petula's 90. And I saw that she was on, the famous writer of Broadway shows, Stephen Sondheim, died a little while ago. And there's some West End show on in called Old Friends, which is based on the music of Stephen Sondheim. And Petula was at the gala performance of it, singing. And
wow, 90.
It's on YouTube, and she's really good singer, still really good. But it's quite a dramatic song as well, so she's kind of acting and singing at the same time. The only other song really that I thought was all right was Your Love Is Everywhere, which is a big ballad. It's got a bit of a walk on by feel to it, I thought. And the strings melody, you probably won't like because the strings are a bit schmaltzy. The strings melody was a bit Strangers in the Night, I thought.
Okay. I didn't particularly like that one. I did quite like We're Falling in Love Again. I thought that was, I like the chorus on that.
Yeah.
So it definitely had its moments, but for me it was an album that I would never really choose to put on.
Yeah, I liked We're Falling in Love Again as well. It's got a bit of an R&B feel to that one, and a nice brass riff.
When the brass comes in, I think rather than the strings, I tend to prefer it.
Yeah. And the other one I thought, well, you know, I might well have danced to this back in the 90s at Café de Paris or Club Montepulciano, one of these funny clubs I used to go to. It was One in a Million. It's very bouncy and perky. It seems like the kind of thing they would have played there.
Annoying, that was.
Yeah, yeah. But the perky is you know, a bit too bouncy. Have Another Dream on Me, One in a Million, and what's the one which really the plinky plonky piano all the way through it? The sun shines out of your shoes.
Doopy doopy doo.
Yeah, it's a bit too jaunty, that one, isn't it?
It's an interesting choice because I think there's the Other Man's Grass Is Always Greener is probably a much better album, I think, than this. But this is the one that Robert Pollard went for. I don't see a lot of influence from this in Guided by Voices, do you?
No. No, not at all, really. No. But, you know, it's an interesting choice. It's an interesting choice. And again, it's quite an interesting pairing because they've both got, you know, songs, quite a few songs that are kind of better known by other people on the album. That's the only thing I could think of, really, that puts them together. And I guess, although Glen Campbell was really a country artist, but he did cross over and become quite, you know, a very mainstream pop artist as well.
I think we're moving away from the pop on later selections. This is the peak pop.
Is that right? Yeah.
I think so, yeah.
Well, I suppose we better give it a mark.
I didn't really like it very much. There were moments, and as you said, there are songs that I liked anyway, which I kind of still like, even done in this style.
Yeah.
I gave it a 3.
Okay. I'm a bit higher than you again on this one. I'm giving it a 4. The voice is great all the way through. The arrangements are a little bit too... what's the phrase you used? Was it M.O.R., you said?
It's M.O.R., Lacrimose.
Yeah. The arrangements are a bit too schmaltzy. But when the songs are good, I'm quite happy to be listening to it. But with the caveat that, a bit like on Glenn's album, there are other versions of the same songs that I would choose to listen to ahead of Petula's version.
Well, I would urge the listener to go and listen to Needles and Pins in French, even if you wouldn't.
Yeah, well, I did like Kiss Me Goodbye, Your Love Is Everywhere, We're Falling in Love Again, and This Guy's in Love with You, and The Good Life. So, 4 out of 10 is my score. So where are we heading next, then? Out of pop territory, you say?
Yeah, well, we're going to look at a band who I've seen play live. I don't know if you have. That's the Flaming Groovies. And we're going to look at two of their albums, Flamingo and Teenage Head.
Robert Pollard's Guide to the Late 60s is a Trust the Wizards production. You can find out more at pollard60s.com and on Twitter at pollard60s. If you liked it, then please subscribe and review wherever you get your podcasts. You may also enjoy their other podcast, which you can find at trustthewizards.com. Original music by the Malibu Storks. Kika Revels and Chorizo Garbanzo are currently appearing in Waiting for Godot at the Mail Theatre in Leeds.